This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha.
Was it always like this? Emptiness that rings like a well to be filled. Tilted on this edge of things, I realize I never knew that birds sang before the light until I did.
Was it something that you sort of kept a little more to yourself?
I think being a national student poet kind of helped me own that a little bit more.
What is this dilapidated home?
I think it can have many meanings. I think it'll always inform who I am.
Shangri-La Ho can describe herself in many ways. She's a nature lover, a Lake St. Louis resident, a class of 2024 John Burroughs School graduate. Shangri-La's also had work published in the literary journal Canary, and as a national student poet since fall 2023, she's visited various parts of the U.S. as an ambassador for youth poetry. Shangri-La is currently finishing out her year as national student poet as she prepares to leave St. Louis for college. And she joins us today to share what she's experienced as a young poet in a national level program, what makes poetry special and worthy of all of this attention and work, and how she hopes to continue her writing journey. Shangri-La, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
So back in August last year, Shangri-La, you talked with St. Louis Public Radio's Jeremy Goodwin about being named one of these poets. And you were looking ahead at that time to your formal installation in the fall as one of five national student poets. What was that ceremony like?
It was so surreal. I was inaugurated by Dr. Jill Biden. And I was there with the other poets. We each read a poem to her. She talked about, I guess, the importance of poetry. And I don't know, it felt so good to be addressed, to have poetry be addressed as something that's valuable and crucial by, the First Lady of the United States.
Mm-hmm. So there were various events that you were part of after that ceremony in Washington, D.C. Is there one in particular that made you think to yourself, I probably would not have participated in something like this if I weren't in this program?
I think probably the most memorable part of my year of service, even though it wasn't directly organized by the National Student Poets Program, it was the panel that I participated in just a few months back called Keeping Language Alive. It was a National Poetry Series panel with Michael Cunningham, Natasha Trethewey, Imani Perry, and Maggie Smith. And I think my role as a national student poet helped get me that opportunity.
And what was it that made you feel that way? Was it the names of those poets and writers that you were just mentioning? Was it sort of the kinds of conversations you were having? What made it so special?
I think it was definitely the conversations. Talking with other writers and creatives is just such a special experience. It feels like you already have this kind of innate bond there. And when we're speaking on the panel, which is actually held at my school, it was an awesome event. Before the panel, we were at a local bookstore called Hearth and Soul, and we recited our work there. We kind of talked about it. It just felt like such an intimate space and a space where I could really connect to them about, poetry's role in our current society, especially from the perspective of a young person.
Mm-hmm. When you tell people that you are into poetry, I mean, first of all, is that something that before you were named a national student poet that you talked about, or was it something that you sort of kept a little more to yourself?
I think being a national student poet kind of helped me own that a little bit more. I was kind of hesitant to call myself a poet I feel like that's kind of a lofty word to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
But stepping into a role as a representative, and especially facing people who might not know poetry in the way that I do, as a poet like that, I think it was definitely important for me to come into my identity as a poet.
Mm-hmm.
And before becoming a national student poet, I definitely wrote in private. I think that's how a lot of us start out. You know, we write, you know, in the comfort of our rooms late at night, no one else is around. So kind of the dichotomy of like that, bringing that interior thing, that personal thing into the outside world as a representative, that was something that I definitely had to adjust to, but it's been very fulfilling.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that you've noted here, I mean, people may think of poetry as a solitary activity or pursuit, mm-hmm. but writing poetry, the process of it, it very much involves other people, right?
Yeah.
And as you are among five national student poets, you know, each of you representing a different region of the country, was there any bonding that happened between you and any of the other student poets, you know, since last year?
I think for sure. It was just really cool because we were all from such different parts of the country. I didn't grow up in St. Louis. I was born in Florida and I've lived in New Mexico. But I think I've already had some exposure to how people from such different parts of the country can be united by common things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that common thing for us was obviously poetry and our love for doing this work. And I felt like we helped each other grow into our roles. We've kind of hyped each other up. I think it's just so awesome to have a network of such amazing young writers that I also know will become, you know, bigger in the future.
Mm-hmm. And you did do some work together on a collaborative poem called Poetry as Archive. What was that process like? How did you all work on something that is, you know, so personal in a collective way?
Yeah, that was an interesting experience. So I felt like it was a little bit rushed, but it ended up coming together in the end. Poetry as Archive is kind of about, because we were heading to a congressional event hosted by the Institute of Museum and Library Services, and we wanted to write about the role of, you know, libraries and the role of people's and kids' access to books and literature and poetry. So it already had that common thread. And we each kind of just wrote in like a collaborative Google Doc. And it feels like each of our segments could stand on its own. But I think when it came together and when we recited it at that congressional event, it felt very cohesive. It felt like we were speaking to each other and to the world.
Mm-hmm. So, Shangri-La, the focus of a lot of your work is the natural environment. And in our introduction, we noted that you've had work published in Canary. And Canary is a literary magazine that is focused on how humans engage with the natural world, mm-hmm. and the power of literary arts of all different kinds to help people understand humans' part in that world. Now, the name of the poem published in Canary in spring of 2023 is Cardinal Direction. It'd be mm-hmm. wonderful to hear that original piece, Shangri-La.
Okay, I would love to. Cardinal Direction. I'm no ornithologist, but when you're wading through shin-deep snow with no jacket, no manufactured layer differentiating you from your wildness, you become the same as all of the other animals in the last reaches of winter, waiting out that singular purpose of survival. If some other Bible-bound man saw you running out, eyes widened upward, he'd say you were looking for God in that infinite and thawing sky. Could you prove him wrong? Your eyes dart from red to red on coniferous green, the searching like a drawl the tongue holds against the hungry cave of its mouth, or the patient pushing every year of birdsong against silence.
And that's Cardinal Direction, read and written by our guest today, poet Shangri-La Ho. Shangri-La is a 2023 National Student Poet for the Midwest region. So here in St. Louis, you say cardinal, and people obviously think, right, of baseball. They think of the birds. I'm not a St. Louis native, but I have definitely noticed all around that there are many cardinals. Is that what you were thinking about with this title, or is it one of the other definitions of cardinal?
I think when you're titling a poem, I mean, I wanted it to have, you know, multiple meanings, depending on the person, depending on the time and place. I'm also not a St. Louis native, and when I was growing up in Florida and New Mexico, I certainly didn't see cardinals, you know, that flash of red through the trees. So coming here, that's kind of something that in a way is defined a part of St. Louis to me. But I was also thinking about cardinal direction as in direction, where we're pulled, but like the direction on a map. This poem, I think, at its core is about hope, a little bit about believing in something. I think about the question of spirituality and religion a lot, and I myself am not religious, but I do think that nature is something that can bring us into closer contact with whatever is outside of our material world. And so I'm spiritual in that way. And I think that brief moment of looking up, seeing the cardinal in the trees, following your eyes through the canopy, that's something that feels like you've touched something greater than yourself. So that's kind of what I wanted to talk about here.
Something else, you know, you have said that you are not a St. Louis native. To what extent is the time that you've spent growing up in Florida and New Mexico, and then a little more recently here in Missouri, how does that inform the way that you approach writing about nature, especially given that these three states, and then in these three states, very specific regions, have very different natural environments?
I think growing up in such different places and having to adjust and readjust over and over again, throughout that process, nature was a kind of sanctuary for me. So even though these environments were so different and so diverse, which is part of the beauty of it, it's something that I could always return to, something that made me feel less alone, and something that was always there when I looked. So I think that has informed my poetry a lot.
Now, another piece you've written more recently is titled Obad, and this poem has kind of a different feel. Please share that one with us too, Shangri-La, starting with the title.
Okay. Abid. Was it always like this? Emptiness that rings like a well to be filled. Tilted on this edge of things, I realize I never knew that birds sang before the light until I did. I'm blinded. The bright orange of the robins that 300 years ago could make an explorer remember his home. The bright orange of the liquid sun spilling out the dark, eating it whole and untoothed as a snake skin shiny with spit and yolk. Colors exploding, then pulsing like an uncontrollable chorus, a subway network of pink veins, a blossoming, bluing bruise, a bullet in the afterword of a bullet. Sliding off the bed in one conservative motion, plunged into consciousness from the bottom up, I realize my feet are solid under nothing. How often have I felt like a top and a bottom walking, making up the middle? I want to point at the sky and ask if it can see itself. Say, look, your sun is rising like low laughter. Your geese are rising like plumes are rising like prayer from this dilapidated home.
And that is Albert by Shangri-La Ho, a young poet who's among five of 2023's National Student Poets. As I was reading this, it did feel different from Cardinal Direction. How much time was there between your writing Cardinal Direction and then this second piece?
At least maybe a year, honestly. Mm-hmm. I can't exactly recall when I wrote Cardinal Direction. I'm not sure how much has my voice has changed, because when I read Cardinal Direction, it still like feels like me. But I think what informed the creation of Ovid, it was actually written for a school assignment.
Oh.
Yeah. My English teacher signed something called a now note, where she asked us to just write about a moment where you felt entirely in the present. And this is kind of, I feel like it also reads like a moment. It reads a little bit faster than Cardinal Direction. I feel like that poem is slower. It's mm-hmm. more, you sit with it. This one was written, I think, when I was up before the sun came up. And I think that's a very spiritual time for me. It feels like I'm watching the world come awake, hearing the birds start chirping. And I was going through, I think, a rough patch of my life. So that something that brought me a lot of hope, and an Ovid can be kind of a song or a poem to greet the dawn after mourning. So mourning, yeah, as in mourning, but also as in, you know, mourning a loss.
Mm. What is this dilapidated home?
I think it can have many meanings. To me, it was kind of the environment maybe inside my own body or inside myself. You know, just thinking of your body as a home, because it is where you exist throughout your life. And I was just going through a lot. So it felt like things were falling apart. And it felt like these geese that were rising, these robins that were chirping, everything was coming awake. It was like, how can I exist like this when there's so much hope right in front of me?
And speaking of the home and the body as a home, when you talked with my STLPR colleague Jeremy Goodwin last summer, you said that identity and culture are topics you sometimes write about, and that you do so as a Chinese American mm-hmm. who feels, quote, a noticeable disconnect from your culture. Does that have anything to do with where you've grown up, you know, in Florida, in New Mexico, more recently in Missouri, and maybe with what you feel like you're supposed to write about because of your heritage? Mm.
Yeah, I think you definitely touched on something that hits close to home. I think definitely because I've moved around a lot of schools growing up. It wasn't just three states. It was, you know, maybe three schools per state. And a lot of those schools were, I was in a grade where I was maybe the only Chinese person or the only Asian person at all. And it's something that you notice, you know, like I can't separate myself from, you know, my Chineseness as I go about the world. And I think at times I can feel like that disconnect. I can feel like, I don't know, I joke, a fake Chinese person, which I think is honestly probably kind of damaging to say. But I think with my poetry, even if I'm not explicitly talking about my culture or my identity, I am speaking as a Chinese person always, even if I'm speaking about nature, even if I'm speaking about hope. Nothing can take that away from me. And I think my experience is just as valid as anyone else's. Mm-hmm. So.
And I did notice that among the national student poets, there is diversity among you, not only in where you all happen to be living at the time when you were appointed, but, you know, right now.
Yeah.
Was there any way that meeting and interacting with a diverse group of people your age, you know, peers who are also, you know, fellow poetry lovers and writers, that it affected how you feel about exploring identity and culture in your writing, maybe a little bit more explicitly, or even from sort of stepping away from that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I feel like representation and diversity, like especially recently, has been thrown around as kind of a buzzword. And I feel like the way we speak about it is very reductive, like checking off boxes. And we forget like how much it can mean to people. This is kind of a tangent, but I remember how I first started writing poetry and how I felt like I could write poetry was when I was a middle schooler in a Barnes & Noble seeing the name Ocean Vuong on a poetry shelf. And I feel like we forget that child, and we just think about, we politicize it. So I don't know. I think diversity, especially in poetry and in this National Student Poet Program, is like crucial, because it means our stories are so different. It means that we can share with each other and with the world these parts of ourselves that might be foreign and familiar to each other. So, mm-hmm.
Both at once?
Yeah.
Foreign and familiar.
Yeah.
So I understand that you are pursuing a poetry-related community service project, which is part of your role as a national student poet. For those listening who are part of a local organization that would welcome the chance to link up with you on incorporating poetry into an upcoming summer event, what might such an activity look like?
Yeah, for sure. I'm really interested in ecological poetry, I think. Not just poetry about nature, but poetry that specifically touches on what we have going on in our world right now, the climate crisis, because I just want people to engage with those messages as they interact with the outdoors and public spaces. So something I would love to do is create installations of excerpts or entire ecological poems in public spaces, partnering with nonprofit organizations. And I think that's one idea. I would also love to do recitations. I think poetry is really about breath, and I think poetry originated from songs. So it was, at its beginning, an auditory art, mm-hmm. an oral art. And I think bringing that into a space with the outdoor world, you know, that communication and that interaction would be really powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want more people to become engaged with poetry, to become inspired by it, because I think poetry saved me and inspires me every day.
Mm-hmm. So Shangri-La, in just a matter of weeks, you will be moving out of state to start college. It would be easy to assume that poetry is going to be a part of what you study formally, but how is it that poetry will stay part of what you do and who you are? Will you be introducing yourself as a poet when you go to freshman orientation?
Mm-hmm. I think maybe not up front, mm-hmm. but I don't think I plan to pursue a career somewhere in the biological or natural sciences, developing like, you know, for clinical applications or environmental applications. But I don't think any work or any school or any other pursuit could, you know, rip poetry from me, because it doesn't really feel like a hobby. I guess that feels like a wrong way to describe it. It more feels like a practice or a way of living.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it'll always inform who I am. So, yeah, I think I really want to continue writing, continue having a place in the literary world, maybe one day publish a collection.
Mm-hmm. So. Shangri-La Ho is a 2023 National Student Poet for the Midwest region. Shangri-La, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I enjoyed our conversation.
This episode was produced by Elaine Cha. Edited by Maya Norfleet.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.